Welcome back to Space Cafe Radio. My name is Emma, and today's guest is Luigi Scatteia. Luigi is a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, also commonly known as PwC Advisory France. And within PwC, he leads the space practice and the core space strategy and policy consulting team based in Paris and Toulouse, focused on serving institutional and commercial stakeholders in the space sector. Luigi, welcome and benvenuto a Space Cafe Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here with me. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have one major question for you. So it's going to be one of those very focused interviews with very few target questions. The starting point to give you a background of where I want to take you is a datum and an observation. The datum is the famous $1 trillion economy by 2040. So space economy has been declared as a booming industry, which will be worth $1 trillion by 2040. The number is so big and so fascinating that it has been repeated again and again and again by literally any mass media out there. So the funny thing is that everyone cites a different source for this number, and nobody really checked who actually said it first and if it was a legitimate source. So what I want to do with you is try to get to the bottom of this number. What does the number mean? Who provided it? And which type of factors took into account? Can you help us?
This is a very, very interesting question, you know, and it's a very critical issue, you know, the sizing up of the space economy. So coming to your specific question, I think it was Morgan Stanley that came up with this figure originally. I mean, don't quote me on that exactly, but I think that's where it came from. But in general, different, let's say, market research firms, even consulting firms like us, providing an estimate of the market right now, which hovers around $300 to $400 billion worldwide, with the growth projected indeed to get to $1 trillion sometimes in 2030 or so. I think the key, the specific issue and the caveats that we need to consider when we consider these numbers is that basically the space economy is very difficult to size up because there is no unified taxonomy and there are a lot of difficulties in setting up boundaries. So just to be more specific, you know, space is not recognized as a category in international standards of industrial classifications and statistics. Therefore, I mean, when you want to size up the market worldwide, you need to start by making all the definitions, you know, providing the definitions, the coverage, and then establishing a methodology for the, let's say, the measurement, the size up of the space economy. So this means that different companies, different market research firms, and so on, might provide different, slightly different, or even widely different numbers, based indeed on the definition, coverage, and methodology that they use. In the end, we say space is a very, very diverse sector, right? It's a sector that encompasses upstream activities that are, let's say, manufacturing of assets, infrastructures, and the operation of such assets and infrastructure. This is what we most commonly associate with space in our imagination, no? Manufacturing rockets, manufacturing satellites, space stations, ground equipment, and so on. And then there is the downstream. So the downstream is everything that has to do with the exploitation of the data or the services that are produced using the space assets produced in the upstream. So this is where things get really blurry, because in the end, downstream services can, operate or be enabled in sectors that are very varied. Right? I mean, you can have downstream services in communication. So you can have satellite-enabled communication. You can have intelligence provision services leveraging satellite data. And these can go and can be applied in sectors like agriculture, oil and gas, insurance, and so on. So in the end, it becomes very, very difficult to set a boundary. So up to this point, it's space. And then from this point onward, it's not space anymore, but it's the host value chain that we could measure. The case in point is really, for example, location-based services, right? I mean, we have global positioning systems like the GPS. We have systems like Galileo. We have GLONASS, all these systems, right, that provide precise positioning. Then all of this, of course, enables a plethora of applications that are based on precise location and that are based on the use, for example, of chipsets that are embedded in our mobile phones and so on. So depending on where you set the boundary, you might say that the entirety of an iPhone and all the services that it provides are enabled by the space economy and therefore should be measured as part of the space economy. Mm-hmm. Or you should say, no, this is just, it's just the value of the chipset inside the phone that should be counted as part of the space economy, and then all the rest should not be counted as part of the space economy. But it's a little bit tricky, right? Because, I mean, almost all the applications that we have on our phone use some form of location, right? And will not work in the same way without precise location-based services. So in the end, there's a lot of issues like this. Setting the boundary in the downstream in a precise way, I mean, and setting it differently can lead to very wildly different numbers in the overall value of the space economy.
I think maybe when the majority of the people, when you think about space economy, you think about asteroid mining or moon exploration or Mars terraforming. But from your answer, it seems to me that the majority of this economic system it will be from satellites and
Absolutely.
Communication.
I mean, in the end, if we look at the value of the space economy right now, you know, as I said, it's estimated more or less between $300 and $400 billion right now, give or take, as I said, by different companies in a different way. But I would say that indeed the majority of this value comes from the downstream. So not from launch services, satellite manufacturing, space stations, operations, and large ground infrastructures. But it really comes from consumer equipment, and from all sorts of services that are enabled by satellites, like satellite communication. This is very big. And observation-enabled services like intelligence, multi-intelligence, and so on. So indeed, that's the vast majority of the space economy so far. Of course, there are other sectors of the space economy that are developing in the upstream. Particularly what you will call indeed the in-orbit economy. So anything that has to do with satellite in-orbit servicing, with space resources utilization, in-situ space resources utilization in particular, in-orbit manufacturing, and so on. So all of this, of course, is something which is to come, right? I mean, it's starting to appear more or less. But all of these serves mostly plans for space exploration and for colonization of the Earth orbit, the lunar orbit, and the solar system. So this is what will drive this type of economy out there. I mean, the fact that there are more and more plans to have a sustained presence of humans into space. And if you want to have this sustained presence of humans into space, you need to have some form of in situ resources utilization and in situ manufacturing, because otherwise we will never achieve this goal just by launching everything from Earth.
Thank you. You anticipated my question. I was just going to say, so if by 2040 probably it's still going to be predominantly downlink space economy, which type of factories or which type of sectors you can foresee that will actually develop and become more important in the near and long-term future?
I think the downstream will still be prevalent. Then there is a possibility for this trend to start reversing. But I think it all depends on the actual plans and roadmaps for in-orbit human presence and space exploration and manned space exploration. Because everything is really, really tied to these plans. So it's important to stress that when you hear about companies that provide commercial space exploration services, right? Like, I don't know, commercial lunar exploration via rovers and so on. So the customers of these companies are still prevalently governments and space agencies. So this is an important factor, right? Commercial space doesn't necessarily mean private demand. So commercial space might still mean institutional demand, let's say. So this is an important aspect to underline, because every time you hear the development of commercial space and so on, there is always some sort of sense that or people imagine that there is a huge private demand for space services. And this is not always true. So it's not true in all domains of space, in all segments of space. So in space exploration and in access to space in general, institutional demand is still very, very strong. So what really distinguishes the current commercial space from the old, let's say, government-driven space is the way this demand is fulfilled. So before, you had space agencies taking over all the risk for the development of space assets, right? With programs that were funded by governments at cost plus for companies. So there was a real risk taking from companies. So companies will just undertake these programs and get paid by the governments and so on. Right now, what is happening is that basically the supply is becoming really commercial, meaning that governments, space agencies, they don't undertake the development of programs, but they contract the provision of services. Yeah. So they contract a company to provide them directly with the service. Okay. This is a big difference. It's a paradigm shift that really identifies commercial space. But still, demand can still be, and actually it still is in many cases, institutional and not private. Yeah.
I understand. It's a small detail in a sort of way, but it's very important because, as you say, it completely changed the relationship between private sector and institutional sector, how the job is assigned and developed and given.
Yeah, it's a small detail because typically when people think commercial space, they think, I don't know, there is a company like, I don't know, Caterpillar or Total or whatever, you know, requesting space services in for space exploration or whatever. This is something that will probably come at one stage. I mean, it's predicted, but I think it's important to stress that in some segments, in some domains, institutional demand remains a significant and a significant driver for the development of the space economy.
Do you think is the new economic bubble, like is it the new subprime mortgages from 2008 again and again?
Well, I mean, this is it's a tricky question, you know. I'm not so sure I want to be quoted on that. But I think there is caution, of course, to be exercised when looking at the trades towards the space economy. So that's for sure. And I think, indeed, there are some companies that are way overvalued. I mean, even in the recent wave of SPAC acquisitions, you can see a lot of overvaluation. But I think it's difficult to say if there will be a bubble or whatever, because I think my impression is that financial markets treat space as they will treat, you know, the tech market. And so everything that happens in space is sort of embedded into a broader tech portfolio somehow for all those companies. So there is way more diversification and, let's say, risk mitigation for the companies that invest in space when such investment is part of a larger portfolio that involves also a lot of other tech companies somehow. This is particularly true of, you know, US-based investments, of course. In Europe, we tend to have more stance of having like the dedicated fund for space or stuff like this, which is a little bit probably trickier. But even dedicated funds for space, I mean, when you go and dig a little bit more, you will see that there is a lot of companies in their portfolio which are more on the broader downstream side, let's say, and more on the bordering on tech rather than really just space. So overall, I think, yes, it's definitely a risky sector, you know, because in the end, in all the, it's a sector which, in particularly if you go into the upstream, where the returns are not exactly immediate and might come longer down the line as opposed to an investment in the tech sector. But if taken properly and properly mitigated, I mean, it can be handled.
I appreciate your carefully chosen words.
It's very tricky. It's very tricky to say. But really, I mean, I think you, when you think about space, you really have to distinguish wildly from the upstream and the downstream. Because downstream really borders on tech and any other part of the what you would call the tech, let's say, ecosystem. And there, I mean, there are usually less risk, less exposure, and shorter-term returns. In the upstream, when you think about ventures related to space exploration or even access to space, right? I mean, you see a lot of companies developing like micro-launchers or small launchers and so on. This is way more risky because it's a much smaller recipient market. And there are way more risks in the development of a vehicle like that, as opposed to the development of a service based on space data or space signal and so on. You see what I mean?
Absolutely. It's a very important differentiation. Thanks a lot, Luigi, for this deep dive into the economic dimension of the space sector. I really appreciated your straight answers, and because this is a sector that is growing so much, so fast, and I think it's really needed to get some clarity. And thank you so for also clarify some of the data that gets repeated continuously. It was a great pleasure to talk to you, and I hope this is just the first one of many interviews. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Space Cafe Radio. If you want to keep yourself busy with the space sector, please don't forget to download and listen to some other of our radio episodes. We always invite a full range of diverse and complementary voices from the space business. We interview politicians, policymakers, entrepreneurs, academics, military strategies, so there is a bit for everyone. You can download our radio episodes from Buzzsprout, but we are also on Spotify and iTunes, so check them out. This is Emma, and I will talk to you soon. Ciao.